This is the Alien UFO Podcast, Episode 3. I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. I've started a Patreon campaign for this podcast. Every week there will be an extended episode for patrons. Obviously, as this is episode 3, there will only be 3 available at the moment, but the back catalogue will grow every week. And this is the free 1-hour version of the episode. The extended episode is 1 hour and 32 minutes, and to get access to the extra 32 minutes, you can join the Alien UFO Podcast Patreon campaign. When you sign up for $7.50 a month, you get an extended episode every week. For $4.50 a month, you get an extended episode every month. And you can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. And my website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And please check out my other podcast. It is called the Past Lives Podcast. There are over 190 episodes. On the Past Lives Podcast, I look into evidence of the afterlife, such as near-death experiences, children with past life memories, mediumship, deathbed visions, and other phenomena. And if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. This week I'm talking to Matt Roberts about his book, Initiated, UAP, Dreams, Depression, Delusions, Shadow People, Psychosis, Sleep Paralysis, and Pandemics. In 2015, Matthew Roberts was a US Naval Intelligence Cryptologist and was stationed aboard the USS Theodore Roosevelt. While on board, the infamous Gimbal and GoFast UFO footage was filmed. This footage was acknowledged by the Pentagon. Later, while at the Office of Naval Intelligence in Washington, D.C., he began to have frequent and often intense personal experiences with the phenomenon and entities associated with UFOs. Hi, Matthew. Thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I wanted to talk to you because I saw your book, which is called Initiated, UAP, Dreams, Depression, Delusions, Shadow People, Psychosis, Sleep Paralysis, and Pandemics. Can I just ask you, first of all, in the book title, you say UAP. So why do you say UAP and not UFO?
Well, UAP, I use that simply because it's going to be the new term. It's not going to be UFO anymore, at least insofar as I think some of these releases from the Pentagon goes. So I just kind of wanted to be forward in my language so that when people start using this term UAP, that people understand what it is and I'm not using some antiquated acronym. If that makes sense.
It stands for unidentified aerial phenomena.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose also the UFO has got so much baggage with it now, and it could mean so many things to so many people.
Well, yeah, and not only that, but if you call it a phenomenon, that's kind of much more encompassing, right? Because it also includes not just craft, but the occupants of that craft and some of the things that start to happen when you come in contact with those occupants.
Yeah.
You can refer to all of that as a phenomenon.
And also, like, the first word of the title is initiated. So what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, I came to understand that what I went through was an initiatory process. And a lot of people who, I would say most people even who are experiencers don't even realize this about contact with the phenomenon, that it's this initiatory experience. And so that's why I call it initiated, because it had a clear beginning, a middle, and an end. And I reached the end. And in fact, I kind of wondered to myself, had I actually reached the end of this process? Because everything was telling me that this was a process, that I was going through something. And you know, that question was answered and confirmed for me.
And so these entities that you interacted with, I'm not sure if we should call them aliens, ETs. I think Whitley Strieber calls them the visitors. They initiated you into what? A kind of greater knowledge of the universe?
Yeah, I mean, you could say that. I mean, it's all about consciousness, right? And consciousness, a lot of people don't understand what this is either. But consciousness, what it does is it gives you a higher consciousness at the end of this. So you do end up with this kind of, 10,000 foot view of what's going on, who you are, what you are, and how you fit into all of this, and what all of this is. And when you have that perspective, a lot of things that you've kind of wondered about come into focus, and you're like, oh, that's what this is all about, you know, and you kind of understand things that you've always wondered about. And the way I describe it is, we all have intuition, right? Something, it's like this little pull inside of you that tells you you should do this or you should not do that, right? Or something is telling you, oh, let's say you meet somebody and you kind of get this vibe from them and there's something just not quite right. And you can't put your finger on it. Well, within this process, at the end of it, what ends up happening is that intuition, it becomes something more. It becomes this kind of, rather than just a simple pull, it becomes this intuitive knowing. And it's a bit hard to describe. Someone who hasn't experienced it, but you just intuitively know things that you really shouldn't know. And so that little pull becomes much, much more amplified and louder and clear. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think so. It's kind of like you're tuning into it over time.
Yes, exactly. And we could talk about that too. Tuning into this because but after my book was published, but before this interview, obviously, there was some research that came out by Dr. Kit Green and Dr. Gary Nolan. And they did some research on the brains of experiencers. And these were all, the participants in this, I think, were all government employees. So people who had experiences who worked for the government. And when they scanned these people's brains, what they found is that there were denser connections between the caudate and the putamen in the brain. And one of the things that they noticed about this is that in the past, this kind of structure in the brain was associated with things like PTSD or trauma. So it was kind of thought to be an injury of some kind. Also people with traumatic brain injury. But what they noticed is that all of the experiencers had this structure in the brain. And it was associated with expanded intuition. That was the only thing they said about it. They didn't say it was anything psychic, just expanded intuition. And I think one of the interesting things about that is that it had historically been associated with trauma. So people who experience trauma. And within an initiation, what happens is there's this tearing down. And that can be very traumatic. And then on the other end of that, you have this building back up. And so I think that the trauma is necessary because we know that when we are in a state of depression, that your brain is actually your brain is working to connect neurons where they weren't connected before. It's making new neural connections in your brain. And so if you have this tearing down, which will then throw you into this state of depression, and then a building back up on the other side, you're dismantling structures within the brain within this process, and then you're putting them back together properly. And, you know, it's my theory that this is just the next step in human evolution, but it has to be a conscious one.
Because there's something called neuroplasticity, isn't there, where the brain will react to things.
Yeah, and when you're depressed, neuroplasticity is increased.
One thing I remember seeing on TV over here on London was that when the black cab drivers in London, before you get your license, you have to do something called the knowledge, and it takes like 2 years, and you have to know every single street in London. Mm-hmm. And they did some brain scans on these taxi drivers, and they found the part of the brain that is associated with memory was larger than your average person.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't understand this about the brain, right? Your brain is constantly changing, constantly evolving. And I think one of what you were just talking about just goes to show that a lot of things that kind of ail us as humans in terms of psychology, a lot of those things are behaviors that can be unlearned. And when you unlearn those things, that can in fact change the brain.
Before all this stuff started happening to you, what was your view of UFOs?
Oh, you know, I had no view at all. I thought it was nonsense, you know, probably like most people out there. If some show came on the television and it was about UFOs, I would kind of roll my eyes and change the channel, you know. But then when I was stationed on board the USS Theodore Roosevelt, of course, I was there in 2015, and we were out doing our workup cycle, and that's when, you know, we captured what is now known as the Gimbal and Go Fast footage. And I worked in intelligence, so I was kind of privy to this at the time. I knew this was happening. And it was a gut punch. It really was. I had kind of an emotional reaction to it. On a level that I didn't understand at the time. But the emotions I was feeling about it were very real, which was a little spooky to me. Because, you know, you don't necessarily have emotions that are unfounded. And I found that I was having this very emotional reaction to what was clearly footage of what we called UFOs. And so, you know, I was unable to eat. I found I was unable to eat for several days because it was just such a gut punch. Because, you know, having had this opinion before that none of this was happening, there was no such thing as UFOs, and, you know, this was all the realm of tinfoil hats. And then suddenly you're in a classified space and you're watching this footage. So, you know, it's real, you know, and people are talking about it. And so suddenly all of that just became real in just moments, you know?
And when you watch the footage back, you say in the book that at one point the thought entered your mind that you had brought them there.
Yeah. You know, I became very paranoid because this wasn't just a one day thing, right? They came back every night for 4 nights. So, you know, I was unable to eat. And then I started to feel paranoid. And then I started to feel like they were there for me. And then I started to get very paranoid that someone would find out that they were there for me. And I didn't know what that would mean for me. And, you know, at the time I was like, how am I feeling this? You know, I don't know anything about this. Where is this coming from? You know? And it was, at the time, it was something that I just tried to shove away and kind of shove into the back of my head because I thought, well, this is crazy. You know, why would I feel this way about this? It's nonsense. It's stupid. But of course, you know, later on, I came to understand that I did know something about this. Although I didn't kind of consciously recall that at the time.
So I suppose these UFOs, these UAPs, they could easily evade any of the detection systems that the Navy had. So they must have been allowing you to see them on purpose.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's something that I think I now understand about this, that if you're seeing them, it's because they want you to see them. If they didn't want you to see them, they simply would just not do anything in front of you, and that it would be very easy to not do that. So if you see them physically flying around up in the air there, there's a point to that. There's a reason for that. And it's because they want you to see them.
And it's also, I suppose there's a lot of people who might look at that and think, okay, they're showing themselves to us, and they'll think, well, they're showing themselves to the Navy, which means it will get to the president. And there's this whole kind of disclosure thing. But actually, it might be something else, like you're saying, they might have been there for you, and it might be much more of a, I don't know, an interdimensional thing or a spiritual thing. And it's not about that kind of first contact scenario.
Right. Yeah. I mean, individuals see these things all the time. You know, I mean, I don't know how many people have a story of, oh, I was camping, I was hiking, I was up in the mountains, I was driving down a road, and then suddenly this thing, you know. So people see these things all the time. And the fact that they allowed themselves to be kind of recorded by the Navy, I think, says something. And the fact that that footage came out into the public sphere, I think, says something. And that's because that's what they wanted. They wanted this.
And there was the Tic Tac footage as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, people might say, oh, they're just showing themselves to the Navy because this is some kind of possible threat type situation. This is, you know, posturing for power in some way. But I would disagree with that. I would say that, you know, the Navy, the U.S. Navy, I mean, any Navy really, but, you know, if footage is captured in this way by professional people, it's much more likely to be taken seriously by the public. Because nobody can say, oh, well, the Pentagon doctored this footage, you know, or that this is some kind of fake. 'Cause to what end? You know, that just wouldn't make sense. So I think the fact that this is happening is very telling.
Can I ask you a question about this? And you probably get asked this all the time. And really, I'm just asking for a yes or no answer. But did other things happen that you can't talk about?
On the Theodore Roosevelt?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. You said that you would study the footage looking for a method of propulsion and you realized it was some kind of anti-gravity. So how is it you came to that conclusion?
Well, so I was a cryptologist in the Navy. And so I knew quite a bit about signals and how signals travel through the air. And I knew that signals travel in waveform, right? And I was driving home from work one day, and I was listening to NPR, which is like the National Public Radio here. And they had a story about these scientists who had discovered that gravity exists in waves. And they knew this because they were able to measure these waves of gravity as these two distant black holes were colliding. And I thought to myself, well, you know, that's how signals work too. And I knew that if you broadcast on the same frequency as an unwanted signal, you could block that signal. And so I thought, well, you could do that with gravity then too, technically, you know, if that's the case. And you could block that unwanted gravity signal. So it would have to be anti-gravitic technology. And so that's how I kind of came to that conclusion.
It's interesting because I don't know how much you would know about Bob Lazar, but decades ago he was talking about gravity waves, and he said he worked at Area 51 on captured alien craft, and he said that's how their propulsion worked.
Yeah, I've heard of that. I have heard of that. I've heard of Bob Lazar. I mean, at the time that I was listening to this, I didn't know who he was. I had never heard of that before. But, you know, since all of this has happened and I've started digging into the topic, I have since heard his story. I don't know if it's credible or not. I mean, I just, with a lot of these things, for me, I base a lot of what I know about the phenomenon just on personal experience. When I hear someone else talking about it, I don't necessarily believe or disbelieve. I can definitely, in some of these people's experiences, see how it mirrors my own. But then a lot of experiencers will turn out to not really understand what's happened to them, which is one of the reasons why I wrote my book, because a lot of this seems so mysterious and not everybody can put this into words on paper. And so I wanted to just kind of help people out there and do that. And not only that, but I feel like I had a duty to do this. I mean, because I had a top secret security clearance for 16 years working in intelligence. I worked at the Office of Naval Intelligence. That was my last duty station. And if somebody can point at me with their family and friends and say, hey, look at this guy. He did all these things. He's not a nut job. You know, he's grounded. He is down to earth. He's not crazy. He had a security clearance for 16 years and he's saying he went through these things. So if I can lend some credibility to that, then I feel like that's what I have to do. But of course there are people out there who, despite all of that, would prefer to say that, you know, I'm just crazy, which of course is not the case.
Did you ever think you were crazy with all these things happening?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's another, yet another reason to write this book. So when I first started going through this, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm losing my mind. You know, I'm having like these constant nightmares. I'm seeing non-human entities in my room at night that are waking me up. This is just, but of course, you have that feeling that you're losing your mind. But me being who I was and having access to things, I knew this was real. You know, I didn't need anybody to tell me, oh no, you're not going crazy. because I knew it was real. And so that's yet another helpful thing, because there, I can't tell you how many people have called me or contacted me since my book came out. And they have these stories, and they, all of them in the beginning, always say, I thought I was going crazy. You know, I thought I was going to have to go check into a mental hospital. But in reading your book, I understand that that's not what's happening here. I'm not crazy. This is actually happening. And so I feel like that's a service, you know, that I have provided people. I think that, and I think that's important, because I think if you think you're going crazy, you probably will, if that makes any sense.
Well, can I ask you about one of your one of the experiences you talk about in the book? Mm-hmm. There was a night where you had this tremendous urge to go out for a drive.
Yes.
And when you decided, you thought, no, this is crazy, I'm not going to do this, it was like you had an electric shock. Can you tell us what happened and what happened at the truck stop?
Yeah. So, you know, this was at this point in my life, I was working at the Office of Naval Intelligence. I had just transferred there. I was living in kind of the suburbs of Washington, D.C. and Maryland. And the footage in the New York Times article had just hit. And so I had started drilling down into that and people who were associated with it, with TTSA, to the Stars Academy of Arts and Science. And I started reading books associated with these people. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm kind of reaching the end of my rope insofar as credible sources go. One of those books, by the way, was a book by Colm Kelleher called Hunt for the Skinwalker, which I thought was very creepy. I mean, it seemed to imply that everything, all of this stuff that we would consider paranormal, is associated with this phenomenon. And I thought it was a little crazy, but at the same time, I couldn't discount the credibility of the people who were involved here. I mean, an Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence was involved here. He was very high up at the Pentagon, Chris Mellon. And so I thought, you know, there's got to be something here. But like I said, I had, as a trained analyst, I was drilling down on all of that, and I was reaching the end of what I thought were credible sources for information. So I decided, well, let me look up and see if there's a MUFON chapter, Mutual UFO Network chapter, near me. And I looked up one night, and there weren't any chapters that I was seeing that were active near me. I was seeing posts from things that were 10 years ago. So I thought, okay, well, that's out. No MUFON. I then decided that I was going to look up this at the end of one of these books by Tom DeLonge. There was this, the characters in this book had found these tablets, these ancient tablets, in a glowing sapphire frame. So I thought, well, let me see if I can figure out what these tablets are, because that didn't sit well with me. I didn't want to have to wait to figure out what these are. So I came across something called the Emerald Tablets, and I came across Isaac Newton's translation of the Emerald Tablets, and I thought, well, that's weird. You know, why was Isaac Newton dabbling in this? And so I started looking up Hermetic teachings, because the tablets mention Hermes. And then I came across this book called The Kybalion. And I read the synopsis of it. And this book, The Kybalion, said that there's no such thing as coincidence. And in reading the synopsis, it basically stated that that's the biggest problem people have with the book, was that there's no such thing as coincidence, which seems to imply that we have no free will. So I thought, well, that's kind of all that seems really out there. I'm not going to read this book. And then the next night I went to bed. Well, anyway, the next day I wake up and I have to drive like an hour and a half south to this place called Pax River, to sign some paperwork and then come back to DC. So I'm on my way back. It's a long drive. And I'm just driving along, and then all of a sudden this hatchback cuts me off and it says, MUFON Marilyn, find us on Facebook. And I thought, oh, well, that's why I didn't find them last night. I don't have a Facebook page. I don't do Facebook. So I'll create a Facebook account just to find them, you know? And just then I was passing this Hobby Lobby off to the right, which is like a chain of arts and crafts stores. And there was a recent Supreme Court decision involving this chain of stores that had recently happened, which I was aware of. And so I kind of made a note of it. But the basic gist of that decision was that it decided that corporations are people in the United States. And so if you're donating money to a political campaign, you're doing so as a person, because that corporation is a person, which is kind of ridiculous to think about, but that was the decision. So anyway, I get home that day and I'm headed up to bed, and my roommate is kind of sitting there watching TV. He's watching the talking heads on the news channels. And he says, you know what's wrong with the Republicans? And I kind of stopped on the stairs as I was headed up, and I said, no, what? He said, Hobby Lobby. He said, that Supreme Court decision allowed all this dirty money into campaigns. And he kind of goes on about that. And I spoke with him for a few minutes about it, but then I went up to my room and I shut the door. And I just started to think, wow, this day was just filled with coincidences, you know, that MUFON hatchback cutting me off, and I was looking that up last night. And then I passed this Hobby Lobby at the same time, and my roommate was just talking about that. And so I started to feel very uncomfortable. And then I my heart was like pounding. My heart just started pounding out of my chest. So much so that I looked down and I could see it kind of lifting my shirt up off of my chest as it was beating. It was almost like, you know, when you get a rush of adrenaline, but there was no adrenaline associated with this. It was just my heart was pounding. So I thought, okay, let me just sit down and see if this goes away on its own, because this is kind of weird. And then I started to feel this urge to get in my car and drive. And I thought, this is... something's going on here. I've never felt an urge to get in my car and drive before. And I thought, you know, it's just because I've been reading these books, you know, and this is some of the stuff they talk about in those books. And so I thought, you know, I'll give into this. I'll go do it. And I'll see that this is just some stupid wild goose chase. Right. So I go down to my truck. And I back out of my space in the driveway into the first point of the 3-point turn to get out of the driveway. And I put the car in drive, and I was about to turn left and step on the gas. But then I thought, you know what? I said, it's getting late. It's like a Thursday night. I got to work tomorrow. I got to get up early for work tomorrow. I can't do this for my own sanity. I can't be leaving the house in the middle of the night on these wild goose chases that are just in my head. And I started to think, you know, you've been reading all these books about this paranormal stuff that happens, and it's getting to you. You know, you got to just nip this in the bud. So I was like, okay, I decided I'm just going to pull back into my spot and I'm going to go to bed. And just as I decided that, I felt... it was kind of like I was attached to a light switch and someone had just flipped the switch. And I felt like this buzzing feeling going through my body. And I could feel it most acutely in like my toenail beds. They felt really raw. And, you know, it's like an electrical shock. Like if you've ever touched a live electrical wire and you feel that buzzing kind of shoot through your arm, that's what I felt. And it was through my entire body. It didn't hurt though, but it was very uncomfortable. And as this was happening, like my hands turned the steering wheel towards the road and my foot stepped on the accelerator, which was, I did not do that because that's not what I wanted to do. And then just as suddenly as it came on, it shut off. That buzzing shut off. And of course, so at this point I'm in a panic, right? Because now I know this isn't just in my head. Because I've never been able to induce the feeling of electrical shock in myself before. So this wasn't just me. So, you know, I'm kind of a mess at this point because now I'm like, well, now what's going to happen here? What is this? And so I'm kind of, you know, in this emotional mess. And I start to feel this sense of urgency. And so I'm like, okay, all right, I'm going to go. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know where this is going to end, but I'm going. So I pulled out of the driveway down the road and I figured I would head to the Maryland 5 South, which was the same route that I had taken earlier to go down to Pax River. And just before the freeway, there was this gas station. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to stop and grab a drink real quick because I don't know how long this is going to take. You know, I might be out all night. Who knows? So I pull into the gas station and I park at one of the pumps. And then this feeling washes over me that whatever I was made to leave the house to do was going to happen right here at this gas station. And so now I'm super paranoid because this is a gas station near the freeway. It's not the best place. There's trash everywhere blowing through the parking lot. It's kind of in a bad part of town. So I'm like looking around and I'm thinking, is somebody going to start shooting here or what's going to happen? So as I'm looking around, I kind of scan the front of the store section of this gas station. And I see that there's these two people sitting at a table out front, or three people, sorry. And they're eating, right? And it's like out of place. And I was like, this has got to be it. Because there was this homeless man who was clearly homeless. He was filthy. And he was sitting with these two women that were just dressed to the nines in professional business attire. And I thought, this shouldn't be at a gas station at almost midnight, you know, in a bad part of town. Why are these two women sitting there eating with him? I mean, they were so professionally dressed that they looked like the women that I worked with at O&I, like they were going to go brief Congress or something like that. So they look very smart and very businessy. So I'm like, I'm kind of reluctant, right? Other feeling washes over me that like I'm supposed to hear what they are talking about. And I don't want to get out of the car. And so I hear this voice, that says, kind of very loudly and very, very sternly, it says, get out. So I kind of grabbed the handle and I opened the door and I got out of the car. But of course I'm a mess. I'm because now I've heard this voice in my head, you know, and it's like, this is just becoming too much, you know? So I'm kind of choking back tears and I'm terrified. Walking across this parking lot, my legs are like wet noodles, you know, and I'm trying to look like nothing is wrong. so that nobody thinks that I'm crazy or something. So as I'm passing this table, one of the women lifts her hand up and she points at the homeless man. And she says, "You see?" She says, "There's no such thing as coincidence. Everything happens for a reason." She says, "I never sit at places like this, but something told me to sit here tonight." And this is what she said as I walked past them. And so I walk into the store and I was like, no way. No way did that lady just say that. Because all of the coincidences that kind of led me to this suddenly seemed very purposeful and by design. And then here I hear this woman say that, and it just seemed so impossible, you know. But then I thought to myself, you know, this is what that book, The Kabbalion, said. And clearly I'm supposed to read that. So, you know, that was what happened. And it was kind of a very frightening situation that kind of kicked all of this off for me. But, you know, again, I knew that that was real because I had never, how can you make yourself feel electric shock? You know, how can you cause all of these coincidences to happen in one single day? And not only just coincidences, but a terrifying kind of culmination of it all.
Yeah, it's like the universe was trying to give you a message and they put all these puzzle pieces together just to, for you to hear that sentence from that woman.
Yeah, yeah. It was unreal.
I wanted to see what you thought of your experience when you said you woke up one night and you felt a hand on your right arm below the shoulder and there was some kind of blue, was it a blue woman?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, I had read this book, The Kabbalion, and I read it several times and I could see the truth in it, to be honest with you, which was a little eerie. I was an atheist, a proud atheist. I grew up in a household. We never went to church. You know, I never believed in that stuff. Of course, I know differently now. But so, you know, I thought, well, you know, this book, The Kabbalion, I came to it by these really creepy set of circumstances. And one of the things that struck me about the book was that it said, you know, when this pupil is ready to learn, so will this book come to you. And it was just very like, how did this guy know that his book would be at the heart of these like paranormal experiences? How does that happen? You know, that's crazy. But anyway, so I thought, well, you know, I've read this book several times. I'm kind of getting it. And maybe this is some kind of learning experience. And I thought, okay, well, I'm ready to learn more. I want to learn more. And so this was the next thing that happened after that. And it, of course, I was not in any way prepared for this. It was very disturbing to me at the time on many different levels. But so I was asleep one night and I felt something grab my arm, my right arm, just below my shoulder. And I woke up. So I opened my eyes and I'm looking at the trim around the window off to my left. And all of a sudden the trim starts to go blurry. And so I went to try and raise my eyes to my hands to my eyes to kind of wipe the sleep out of my eyes. And my arms just kind of flopped there. And I realized I can't move. And so I looked down and I saw that I no longer had the comforter on me that I always sleep with. And then I was like, wait a minute. I woke up because somebody grabbed my arm and I can still feel that hand on my arm. So being unable to move, I kind of had to fight to turn my head to the right to see what was going on over there. And as I do this, my room is becoming blurrier and more out of focus. And then I'm looking to my right. And then I see that there's this, I guess I could only describe it as a shadow figure, like this dark torso, two arms and a head, kind of standing next to the bed and kind of bent over looking into my face. And as I'm looking at this, I think to myself, well, I should be terrified right now because there's somebody in my room. They're touching me and I can't move. And it's the middle of the night. Why would that ever happen? You know? But I was like, but I'm not terrified for whatever reason. I'm not afraid. And as I'm looking at this, all of a sudden, my room behind this shadow person starts to light up in like this golden light. And the light becomes very intense and blinding. And then the light concentrates into these rays of golden light coming out of its head. And then I see like this image appear over the face of this entity that's standing over me. It's almost like there was a tablet that was hanging in front of its face. And all of a sudden this image appears on it and it starts flipping through images. And these are all images of people that I know. And then it stops on an image of an ex of mine from 20 years ago. And I'm like, what is going on? You know, cause it was, this just seems so bizarre. To be happening in the middle of the night. So I start to lose consciousness again and I go back to sleep. And I'm having this dream where it's just my ex and I, and we're surrounded by nothing, right? There's no floor, there's no bed, there's no nothing. And I start to have this sexual dream. But then I start to wake up and I'm back in my room now. And I can see that there is this female on top of me and she's having sex with me, obviously. And my hands are on her thighs and I can feel that her skin is not like normal human skin. It's much thicker than human skin. So I knew immediately, I was like, this woman is not, she's not human. And at the time I remembered thinking there's got to be some kind of craft parked in the backyard or something that she had just came out of. And her skin is blue. It's like this light kind of powder blue skin. And I start to scan upwards towards her face. I can see that she's wearing this tube top looking thing. And it's kind of shiny and glistening and metallic looking. It almost looks like it was made of like silver and tiny rubies or something, because it had these silver and ruby zigzag pattern to it. And so I start to look up towards her face and her face is just totally blurred out. I could see that there was a face there, but I couldn't make it out. It was just, all of it was a blur. And it was not clear at all. So then I fall back asleep and I'm back in my room several times throughout this experience. And I can see this woman on top of me. And then of course, like I climaxed obviously, in my dream. And then I wake up in my room the next morning and I really hate that people, when they talk about these experiences, they're like, oh, it's just sleep paralysis. Right. And you're just dreaming. Or you're hallucinating. I did not hallucinate this. I know the difference between a dream and reality. You can always tell. So I knew I was in my room. And never in a dream have I been able to feel like someone's skin texture, for instance. This was the first experience I had, and I went down to my truck the next morning and I was like, what happened last night? What was that? And I just kind of lit a cigarette and I was like dry heaving because it was just so, all of it just seemed so disgusting to me at the time. And I thought, this is a nightmare, you know, because this is going on, right? And people have always been talking about this. And I thought this was just the realm of tinfoil hats. And I didn't think there was anything to this, but now I know. I know there is. And I thought, you know, I started to think about that whole light show of my room lighting up and then the golden rays of light coming out of her head. And I thought, this looks like all the religious art I've ever seen from all over the world, right? Like some kind of divine entity that has these rays of light or a halo above its head. And it really was very reminiscent of that. And I thought, this has been going on a very long time. And people have been having this experience for a very long time. And then I started to think, I was just raped last night. This can't happen. This is stupid. And I started to think, why is this happening? You know, I felt violated. I felt sick. I felt just kind of disgusted about the fact that there's no one I could even talk to about this, because they're going to think I'm crazy. But I'm not. So it was just the whole thing was just disturbing, right? The not being able to talk to anybody about it, the fact that it happened, and feeling like I'd just been raped, it was too much, you know? And so that's where I was at the end of that experience.
And you talk about other experiences in the book, and some of them seem kind of bizarre. I think you said that you got to a point where you just wanted to forget all this stuff and you didn't want to investigate it anymore. And then at night there was a small guy appeared in your room and said, don't give up.
Yeah, yeah. So I had, after months of this kind of thing, like entities in my room at night, I was having constant nightmares that were so bad that I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would be fighting to get out of this dream, right? And it was almost like there's just this unseen hand that was just pushing me back into it. And no matter how hard I fought, I could not get up out of bed. I could not fully wake up, and it would just push me right back in to that same dream. And I would get up and like there'd be like this sweat outline of me, and my clothes are so soaking wet with sweat that it looked like I had been standing in a shower and I would have to change. And of course I had this just intensely deep depression that had set in, and a paranoia. Like I would sometimes sit up at night, just because the thought of going to sleep was too much. I didn't want to have another experience. So I would actually sit up all night long on the edge of my bed, just terrified. And I would wait for my alarm to go off, and I would put on my uniform and I would go to work. And so I would be awake for days at a time sometimes. And of course, you know, if when you're awake for days and you're in this state of depression and paranoia, it really doesn't help. So I had been reading other books by this point, because this Kybalion was such a jolt to my system that I thought, well, this guy, he knows something. This guy who wrote the Kybalion, his name was William Walker Atkinson. So I started to read other books by him. And, you know, he was explaining a lot of things in terms of Eastern philosophy, meditative techniques, breathing techniques, things like that. And I was started reading this other author that he had also published her books called Light on the Path. Her name was Mabel Collins. She was a British school teacher. But she wrote this book called Light on the Path, another one called Our Glorious Future, and then another one called When the Sun Moves Northward, The Way of Initiation. And so I'm reading these books and I'm seeing that clearly this is some kind of process, right, that I'm going through. And there are these steps. And I don't know where I am in this. But after months and months and months of this, I was just like, I can't take it anymore. You know, I was sleeping with my light on. I was like a 40-year-old man sleeping with the lights on, because the dark was just this terrifying place to me, where just nothing made sense anymore. You know, where I would see these non-human entities in my room at night. So I was sleeping with the light on, and I thought, I got to this breaking point and I was just like, this can't keep happening. I can't keep going like this. I thought, I've got to just stop this. So I thought, you know, one day I was like, I thought to myself, I can't do this anymore. This is over. This is just over. Whatever this is over, because I am done, you know? And I thought, I'm going to throw these books in the trash tomorrow and just be done with it. Because this is too much. This is it, months, and I have no idea where I'm going. I don't know what the point of this is. It's just crazy. So I thought, you know, I'm going to throw these books in the garbage. Forget it. I don't want to be bothered again. I don't want you to wake me up in the middle of the night anymore. I'm done with the nightmares. I'm done with this intense depression. I mean, there were days that all I could do was just sit, lay on the floor, my bedroom floor after work. And I would just pull a comforter over me and just lay there and shiver, and I was crying like a baby and my teeth were chattering. And so I decided I was done, right? Don't bother me anymore. This is stupid. And I felt like an idiot, right? That I had been roped into something, whatever it was that I had been roped into. So I said, don't bother me anymore. I'm going to bed. And I probably went to bed angrier than I had ever gone to bed before. I don't even know how I fell asleep being that angry, but I did. So at some point during the night, I wake up and I've got that familiar, heavy, paralyzed feeling. And I just wanted to punch somebody. Like, whoever you are, I'm going to just punch you in the face, because I told you to leave me alone, you know? So I'm opening my eyes. My room is kind of blurry and it starts to come into focus. And I'm laying on my right side, just looking across my nightstand. And as it comes into focus, I was like, no way. What am I seeing right now? You know? And there was this small man standing there. The only way I can describe him is that he looked like a yard gnome, you know, like those gnomes that people put out in their gardens, and it's got like a red cap on it and a white beard. That's what he looked like. But he was wearing these big, thick, black glasses. And I was like, what am I looking at right now? You know? And I could see that there was this glow within the glass, because I could see the like the ridge of his nose came down and was underneath the glass. And there was this red kind of glow, like a slight, it was like very small, like it was almost like the cherry on the end of a lit cigarette inside this glass. That's how much light it was giving off. So anyway, I'm looking at this and I'm like, what is this? You know, he had this white locked beard and white locked hair. And he's just looking at me. Maybe he was maybe like 3.5 feet tall. And he's just looking at me and I'm looking at him. And then he says telepathically to me, because his lips didn't move, he said, "Don't give up. Keep going." And then put me back to sleep. And I had some choice words for him as he was putting me back to sleep. Words that I won't say here, but yeah, so, I was upset, that once again, I had been disturbed, but he did say, "Don't give up, keep going," which kind of indicated to me, I woke up the next morning and I thought, you know what? Maybe he knows something clearly that I don't know. You know, there's got to be some reason for this. This has got to be leading somewhere. If he tells me, "Don't give up, keep going," that means obviously I haven't reached whatever the end of this is. And I need to keep going, because he knows better than me. I know it, because if you can build a craft that rides around in its own space time bubble as propulsion, you've got to know more than I do, you know? So he knows something that I don't know, and I have to just keep going with this. So I did.
Well, it's been great talking to you. The book is called Initiated: UAP, Dreams, Depression, Delusions, Shadow People, Psychosis, Sleep Paralysis, and Pandemics. And that is on Amazon, and it's on Kindle and paperback, isn't it? And can people get it in other places?
Nope, it's only available on Amazon, unfortunately, because I had to self-publish. So yeah, Amazon's the only place you can get it. But it's free on Amazon Unlimited. So if you have Amazon Unlimited, it's not going to cost you anything.
And do you have a website?
I don't have a website. Are you familiar with Clubhouse? I'm on Clubhouse a lot. Yeah, it's just like a social networking forum where you can open up a room on any topic, and then people can come into that room, people just in the general public, and listen to you speak. So I do Clubhouse a lot. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. Just look for me there, and I shouldn't be too hard to find.
Great. Thanks again for coming on the podcast. It's been great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a great, great show. Thanks.
And that was an interview with Matt Roberts about his book, Initiated: UAP, Dreams, Depression, Delusions, Shadow People, Psychosis, Sleep Paralysis, and Pandemics. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. This is the free 1 hour version of the episode. The extended episode is 1 hour and 32 minutes. If you join the $4.50 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. If you join the $7.50 a month tier, you will have access to an extended episode every week and the back catalogue of extended episodes. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, where you can find my other podcast. It is called The Past Lives Podcast. There are over 190 episodes, and is where I look into evidence of the afterlife. In my work as a clinical hypnotherapist, I take people through past life regressions. And when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me, and you have signed up to the Patreon campaign, you get a 25% discount. I'm offering a free consultation call which can be booked on my website. My Instagram is Past Lives Podcast with an underscore between each word, and on Twitter I am at Simon G. Bowne. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.